Hey guys, welcome back to another episode of the Bill Barnwell Show. That's me. I'm Bill Barnwell. Today, we're going to be talking with ESPN's Seth Walter about the future power rankings he helped contribute to for ESPN. This is ranking the NFL teams 1 through 32 based on how they're going to look like, or what they're going to look like, I should say, over the next 3 years. We're going to talk about the top and the bottom of those rankings, everything else in the middle, available on ESPN. But before we do that, I want to tell you about a brand new ESPN podcast. It's DC and RC. New episodes every Wednesday and Thursday featuring UFC legend Daniel Cormier and Super Bowl champion Ryan Clark. They're both Louisiana natives. One of them is a former MMA fighter. One of them, a former NFL safety. They hang around and kick out the hottest topics from around the world of MMA and preview and review the most important fight cards and storylines. Find DC and RC wherever you get your podcasts. Also, 30 for 30 is back with Breakaway, a film about WNBA superstar and activist Maya Moore. This film explores the story of Moore, one of the best basketball players on the planet, stepping away from the sport she loves for a remarkable reason: to fight for a man she believed was wrongly imprisoned. Stream Breakaway now, only on ESPN Plus. And now, here's Seth Walter talking about the best and worst teams in the NFL over the next three seasons.
The 2024 NFL Draft heads to Detroit, and it's time to see who gets the job.
Caleb is a unique and special talent throwing the football.
And what sets them apart.
The Heisman Trophy winner is Jaden Daniels.
All of the greats were hired here.
What a throw by Mahomes.
See who gets the job.
Are you ready?
The 2024 NFL Draft begins Thursday, April 25th on ESPN, ABC, and NFL Network.
All right, joining me now here on the Bill Barnwell Show, as promised, someone who I have a ton of respect for and someone who has done great work in the past on the beat for the New York Jets, but also for several years now has been at ESPN in our stats and info department, taking and helping to develop a lot of the great metrics we have, but then also writing about them, having them make sense to dum-dums like me. A super smart person and a super insightful person when it comes to the NFL. It is ESPN sports analytics writer, Seth Walter. Seth, how are you?
I am great, Bill, but that was a really overly nice intro. I appreciate it, but I'm just honored to be here, longtime listener of the pod. So I really appreciate you having me.
Long overdue, I feel like, to be on the pod, if I'm being honest with you. I think that's on me for not having you on earlier.
No, not at all. I always enjoy listening, and you have great guests and just getting your takes. Always someone I look to when, especially your grades, like in free agency with Bill, when I'm like, why did a team do that? And I always check myself for a hot minute, wait till Bill's grades come out, make sure I'm not crazy. And, you know, that's how I know.
I wish I had the same confidence in my grades that you have, but unfortunately I remember all the bad ones. I remember giving like Robert Woods going to the Rams a D+, where I was like, yeah, this guy's not that good. All he does is a good blocker, but doesn't put up numbers. And then oops, as it turns out, moving from a Greg Roman offense to a Sean McVay offense changes your production.
Well, if it makes you feel better, the one I remember is when the Jets signed George Fant, and I thought, what is going on there? Like, what am I missing? I was like, I'll wait for Barnwell's grade. I believe it was a D. And a year later, I think the D was spot on.
Wow. That's tough. And I think it's one of the things we're going to talk about today in sort of like how you build a roster, how you construct things. Like, that was sort of a damned if you do, damned if you don't situation, because the Jets needed to do more to protect Sam Darnold, who, I mean, was really struggling with pressure. George Fant is someone who does not have a ton of experience in the NFL at tackle. He had a brief spell as the Seahawks left tackle, I think, and then has had some injuries, was a swing tackle for a while. So, I mean, you want to do something if you're the GM, if you're Joe Douglas, but I don't know if that's the right move, even if you need to do something.
I think, yeah, I agree. I mean, it was like they paid non-trivial money for someone who was not proven in any way. And I think, you know, they just basically swapped Brandon Schell with Fant. Mm-hmm. And Schell, I believe, had performed better in pass block win rate prior to that trade than Fant and continued to after, if I recall correctly. So, I mean, I'm with you. It's like, don't get me wrong. My criticisms of the Jets offensive line is always like, they should do more about it. But I don't think that, I didn't think that was the right move. And, you know, they signed Morgan Moses now. So presumably that helps them in that area.
Yeah. I mean, George Fant, $8.5 million base salary for 2021. I think 4.5 of that is guaranteed already. So we will see. He might not even make the roster. But that would be a tough, that'd be a tough dead money there for George Fant. I did not have talking about Jet swing tackle as the first topic on the podcast, but we hit that. We hit Jet swing tackle early on in this show, which I'm excited about. We are today going to talk about the ESPN Future Power Rankings, which is a project that you did with several of our colleagues, Lewis Riddick, of course, who formerly an NFL personnel man, of course, been on television with us for a long time now, one of the hosts of Monday Night Football, Jeremy Fowler, who we had on the show a couple of weeks ago, excellent reporter for us at ESPN, and then Field Yates, who, in addition to being just a great head of hair, and a wonderful human being. Everyone loves Field Yates here at ESPN. A former player, a former scout with the Patriots, and of course, someone who you can hear each and every week on Fantasy Focus. So a variety of perspectives here. And Seth, you're coming from, I think it's fair to say, a more analytically inclined perspective. So we're going to get into what you guys thought. And then before we do that, I want to talk about just the general idea of what this project is like. So Seth, can you please set the scene for what the future power rankings are and what you were asked to do?
Yeah, sure. So the idea is to power rank these teams, not for like literally the present, but to think about it from a 3-year perspective. So 21, 22, and 23. And so the way that our editors lay this out for us is we rank every team in 5 different areas. So we rank the quarterback, the entire roster except for the quarterback, the coaching, the draft, their draft, and the front office. And the editors provide some weighting to those 5 areas, but the idea is to basically try and get this image of the team, but thinking about all those things through a sort of 3-year window. So, you know, that age can be a factor for players, for coaches. And so we put that all together and then get a full power ranking 1 to 32.
Yeah. I mean, I know that when I've talked in the past with NFL cap people, for example, when they're evaluating a contract, a veteran contract that a guy has just signed, they typically take the value of the first 3 years of that deal as the value of the contract, because once you get into 4 or 5 years in the future, it's just too hard to project, too hard to predict what's going to happen. The chances are that the veterans on that roster are going to be either somewhere else or retired or negotiating a new contract. And for the rookies, of course, you know, you're going to get to evaluate those guys over the course of the next 3 years. So you either don't know what they are yet, or they're going to be in a totally different situation, possibly on a different team. So I think 3 years is the perfect window there. In terms of the teams themselves, I mean, obviously you're asked to talk about several different topics and then put together these ratings on a scale between 50 and I guess 50 and below to 100. To me, it sort of seems like there's an obvious first team. I don't want to spoil too much about it, but we'll get into a few of the teams here. The Kansas City Chiefs finished number one. Was there any doubt for you that the Chiefs would be number one?
No.
Yeah, that's fair.
It's sort of hard to imagine a world where a team has not just Patrick Mahomes as their quarterback, but like a 25-year-old Patrick Mahomes as their quarterback, and thinking that that team is in any position but the best. And it's like, I guess it's possible if everything else around him were really poor, then it is possible. But like Andy Reid's his head coach, he's throwing in Tyreek Hill and Travis Kelce. They rebuilt the offensive line. I mean, I'm not saying that like the entire team is perfect by any means, but like it has to be pretty bad to get Kansas City down below that one spot, I think. Do you agree?
Yeah, I mean, I think so. Like I'd be intrigued. I mean, maybe I'll ask you, if you were going to play devil's advocate, could you make a case, not really for another team, but just that there are flaws with the Chiefs that would lead you to believe that they should not be maybe the top team over the next 3 years?
I think defensively there are flaws that you could, I mean, this is a team that was a below average defense last mm-hmm. year. And I think they have a lot of money tied up in Frank Clark that, you know, Frank Clark is a player that we, you know, our numbers have not liked for a long time, mm-hmm. dating back to Seattle, like relative to his reputation. I mean, and like, actually, I think that move is maybe indicative of a kind of move that I wouldn't like. Like, so for judging the front office, like the idea of trading a sort of making this like D Ford for Frank Clark swap and giving up draft capital to do it and then paying Frank Clark. That was a really tough move. Now it's okay. You can make up for a lot with Patrick Mahomes, but like, I also don't want to criticize the front office too hard because I think that they like really committed to an offensive line this off season. And like, you know, something I did recently was like was predicted pass blocking, and I've got the Chiefs at, I think it's 6, wow. You know, and that's pretty darn good. Like if you're going to have Patrick Mahomes and you want to protect him and we think that you're going to have like the 6th best pass protecting line, you've done your job there. So I don't know. I know it's supposed to be devil's advocate. I'm not sure I can see it.
I mean, I guess I would think about that defense, like you said, and like the offense at the end of the day, they're going to be great. Like even if they were, I don't know, maybe you could say, okay, if they lose Tyreek Hill, if Travis Kelce ages over the next couple of years, which he will, mm-hmm. There's not much in the cupboard. But then again, you got to figure Patrick Mahomes is going to make whoever is in that offense look good. Like, you know, Mecole Hardman maybe hasn't been all that great, but if they draft a wide receiver in the next couple of years, he's probably going to be pretty good with Patrick Mahomes throwing passes to him. I think you can make a case that the defense is trending to be a problem. I mean, their draft picks have not been great on that side of the ball, with maybe one Thornhill as a recent one as an aside, and Chris Jones, but Chris Jones was drafted a little further in the past. But this is a team that's really top heavy on defense, and the three core players there are Frank Clark, Chris Jones, and Tyrann Mathieu. And there's a decent chance, maybe even a good chance, that this time next year, two of those three guys are gone. Frank Clark, of course, facing felony possession of a weapon charges. And Tyrann Mathieu is going to be a free agent. And there has not been, to my knowledge, great progress made on a new deal there. So, you know, wouldn't be shocking if they were rebuilding on defense over the next couple of years. And I think the offense is going to be great, but you know, that offense with a defense that is middle of the pack in FPI or DVOA is really good. That team with the defense that's like bottom 4 in DVOA, that's a different question.
So maybe the case against them is like, they're fragile. Like, I mean, if you have a Mathieu injury and a Tyreek Hill injury, that all of a sudden it does change quite a bit about what you think about that team. I do think that Mahomes with a good offensive line is like, you're going to have a great offense.
Terrifying.
Even if you sustained a playmaker injury.
Terrifying. But
yeah. I mean, if you had a Mathieu and a Chris Jones injury, then maybe you're talking about a really poor defense and now you are in trouble.
Yeah. So, I mean, at the end of the day, I think Chiefs are number 1 just because of Mahomes. I think it's so far in the right direction. Number 2, the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. Now, this was surprising to me. Was it as surprising to you to see Tampa Bay, even though they just won the Super Bowl, finish in the second spot?
Yeah, a little bit. Because like the first question is, when's Tom Brady going to stop playing?
And yes.
I think it's the same question that, you know, people have been asking for a long time, especially in the AFC East. But mm-hmm. I was a little surprised because of that. Like, I didn't have them in the quarterback zone as like a top 5 mm-hmm. team because of that. and draft wise, like, it's not necessarily a fault of their own, or it's not, you know, it's to their credit that they drafted 32nd, but like, it's reasonable to expect that their draft output this season is going to be worse than a team drafting in the, you know, in the top half. So
of course,
so that goes against them. I think though, the reason why they're there is the rest of this roster, which is really strong. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's, we saw it all through their Super Bowl run, but they've got players, you know, everywhere. I mean, it's like offensive line good. The receivers are good. They've got, you know, you got players at every level of the defense that scare you. You mm-hmm. got Shaq Barrett, the two linebackers, and Lavonte David and Devin White. You got Carlton Davis at corner. I mean, Antoine Winfield. So there's a lot of good players there. And I think that carried over too to the credit I give Jason Light, which is amazing for me to say. Like, I think I would have been shocked a few years ago if I heard myself crediting Jason Light, because I just had a hard time imagining someone who traded up to draft a kicker in the second round that I would be praising them. But, you know, everyone makes a poor move here or there. And by and large, he's built a really good team. So when we factor in front office there, I think they deserve some credit for that. And so I think it really comes down to that roster and the fact that, like, ultimately right now they are a, you know, a Super Bowl contender, a top Super Bowl contender. And that has to count for something. Like, we know they are a Super Bowl contender this year, as opposed to other teams where you are thinking they might be a strong Super Bowl contender in 22 or 23.
Yeah. I mean, Jason Light, you know, if you leave the kicking game aside, has done a pretty good job even before Brady. Unfortunately, the kicking game has been a problem, but hey, they figured it out last year. They finally got it to work. I think they didn't attempt a field goal until the Super Bowl. So I think that was a solution, is just get Tom Brady and you won't have to kick field goals in key situations. So maybe that is how you fix a kicking problem. I guess having that sort of like bird in the hand of your favorites to go back to the Super Bowl this year might mean more than having a roster that seems like it could go to the Super Bowl in 3 years. I think there's some truth and validity to that. I look at the rest of the teams in this top five, and, you know, it's tough for me to imagine any of them being 6-10 or 6-11, I should say. Geez, 17 game schedule. Sorry. 6-11, 3 years from now.
Still Tampa, gets me.
Yeah. Tampa is the one team that I feel like could do that. And I mean, the roster looks awesome right now, but not only would you talk about maybe the players on this roster getting older and having guys like Gronk or Brady or Ryan Jensen or Ndamukong Suh or JPP, you know, a lot of those guys not being here in 2 to 3 years, but also the coaching staff. I mean, Bruce Arians is by all accounts a very good head coach, a guy who was retired before the Bucs hired him and could be retired again in a couple of years. And Todd Bowles, a guy who did an excellent job coaching up this defense over the past 2 years, he'd figure is going to be a hothead coaching candidate over the next couple of seasons. So I wonder if there might be sort of a brain drain here as well.
I think that makes sense. For me, when I was thinking about it, a lot of this came down to what you called the bird in the hand thing. And it does ring true, but I agree that this is a team that is, they're at their peak. They may sustain this peak for a little bit, but they will go down at some point, right? Because of not just Brady, but the other folks you mentioned. And so there is room for decline here over the next 3 years for sure.
Okay. Put a number on it. Seth Walder, this is going to be recorded. It's going to be brought up in the future. When is the last season where Tom Brady will post an above average QBR or adjusted net yards over attempt or whatever quarterback stat you want to use? When is the last season Tom Brady will post an above average quarterback performance in a meaningful number of pass attempts?
Wow. That's a good question. I will say 2022.
I was hoping you were going to say 2020. That would have been the juicy answer.
That would have been juicy. Hey, let's be clear. In 2019, Tom Brady finished 17th in QBR.
True.
So it's not unprecedented.
That's true. But he came back and one of the best weapons groups in football.
Yes, he did have exceptional help, but I don't, in 2021, he's going to have that same exceptional help, mm-hmm. at least for 2021.
I don't think, I don't know about you. I feel like the NFL is not emotionally prepared to see the fall of Tom Brady. I think when Brady does have that, either Brady retires or he does have that season where he does have the Peyton Manning final season or the Brett Favre final season where he's two times as many interceptions as touchdowns, he's getting benched. I feel like there's going to be so many articles about, this is the end of the NFL because Tom Brady is fading and there's no guy to replace Tom Brady.
Firstly, there's lots. The guy who played in the Super Bowl is the guy to replace Tom Brady.
Of course.
We got that. But yes, I agree with you that we're not emotionally ready for that. The NFL as a whole. And I mean, it could happen. I do feel like we've reached this whole point where we feel like it seems like he's immortal, but we know he's not. But I will say this, Tom Brady has done his part to affect our metrics in that he basically broke our entire predictive quarterback rating system because every year we've redone it now for 2021, but every year, the model went into the season assuming, Tom Brady must be bad because look how old he is. And then every year it was proven wrong. So, he has at least recalibrated age curves that he has definitely done and will continue to do even be after he's retired.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. In terms of the teams in 3 and 5, so two teams in the top five here that I think are similar, not in every way, but in some ways, the Baltimore Ravens and the Cleveland Browns. The Browns, to me, and you're someone who follows the developments of analytics and the growth of analytics in the NFL closer than anybody. The Browns, to me, the most analytically inclined team in the NFL. The Ravens, probably pretty close. Maybe not as directly of an impact, but certainly I think the Ravens have a big impact with analytics, the Browns even more so. These are also two teams whose offenses for most of the year were run heavy teams. The Ravens with Lamar Jackson, a run heavy team the past few years. The Browns with Baker Mayfield, more run heavy in the first half than the second half, actually became more of a passing team over the second half of the season, but still a team that I think if you ask Kevin Stefanski what they do well, he would say we run the ball well. We know quantitatively that it's more efficient and typically smarter to throw the ball than it is to run the ball. You want to have a balance. No one's saying throw the ball every single time, but if you had a choice, you'd rather throw the ball 60% of the time and run the ball 40% of the time in neutral situations than a 50-50 split. Can a successful, smart, analytically inclined team be sustainably good doing something that we know is not particularly efficient in terms of your selections when it comes to your offense?
I think they can, but you kind of need to, a lot needs to go right. Mm-hmm. And I think that looks like the 2019 Ravens. And you have an excellent running quarterback. And then I think they had phenomenal blocking. Mm-hmm. And they ranked second in run block win rate that year. They also ranked second in pass block win rate that year. I think top three. And I think that when you do that, I didn't have a problem with the Ravens offense and the way that they ran the ball in 2019. They were an efficient offense. You cannot, I think it's hard to criticize that. I think I would not be surprised if we see a decent, this is just a guess really, but a decent jump in passing for the Browns though, in 2021. I mean, like you said, they did pass the ball more as the season went on. They also had a couple of, I think, weather games.
Yes, they did, for sure.
That reduced their pass rates. And like they were, if you look at their EPA per play, like they were much, much more efficient passing the ball. They also lost Odell Beckham for a good chunk. So I would expect Cleveland to pass more just because it is naturally more efficient. That's my guess going into 2021. I do think they are, you know, it's interesting. Last year when I surveyed staffers, the Ravens were voted the most analytically inclined team, but I guess I'm going to do that again this year. And I'm going to guess it flips to the Browns this season. They do have the largest staff, the Browns.
Yeah. So, I mean, for sure. I think the largest staff, and also no disrespect to John Harbaugh or Eric DaCosta, who I think are super smart and super open-minded, but like, I mean, Andrew Berry is just, I think, you know, he was born into the analytics. And and like, you know, it's something that he's had every step of the way, as opposed to maybe a more traditional background.
I think that's right. I think that's right. And so, yeah, like that is a partial basis for me in thinking that the Browns are going to pass more. So I feel like sort of bullish on maybe like Baker's passing numbers or something like that going into the year.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I mean, we've talked about, and this is so anecdotal, like we went from like, you know, a quantitative analysis to the most anecdotal of anecdotal arguments, but that second year Shanahan offense boost, I mean, you know, it works for some people, works for Aaron Rodgers, works for Matt Ryan. So who knows? I mean, but I think there's a really interesting thing there because, you know, in the NBA, for example, you know, certainly to some extent, we've seen teams like the Spurs, for example, who were, you know, great in the mid-range. For a time when analytics were coming more popular in the NBA and teams were being told, take more threes, you know, avoid the mid-range altogether. You know, I think it's, you know, it'll be really interesting to see. And I do agree with you that I think the Browns will throw the ball more frequently in 2021. But if they struggle, if they have issues, if they aren't as good as they were a year ago, I wonder what their solution will be. I wonder what they will go back to.
If they do struggle, that's quite an indictment on Mayfield. That would be quite an indictment on Mayfield because I think he's set up about as well as you possibly can be to have a successful passing game. Like I mentioned, predictive pass blocking, like they're number one. You know, Odell Beckham and Jarvis Landry are your receivers. That's not like the best receiving core in the league anymore, but it's still good. And then you have this threat of an efficient running game as well. So Mayfield has to produce here. I expect he will, but you can't. He's really in a great place.
Yeah, absolutely. On the bottom side, on the flip side of things, sorry to try to talk about them, but were you more surprised or not more surprised? Were you less surprised that the Kansas City Chiefs were number one in these rankings or that the Houston Texans were number 32 in these rankings?
Oh, wow. Gosh. I mean, I would have said, you know, 99% plus on both, but wow, that's close. Yeah, maybe the Texans are more of a lock to be at.
That's so sad. They have the reverse Patrick Mahomes.
They do. Wow. Yeah, I would have been just blown away by either, to be fair. But yeah, I didn't think there's any question that Houston was going to be at the bottom of this list.
I mean, is there any hope? Is there anything you can point to and say like, okay, at least they have X or Y to look forward to over the next couple of years?
Their offensive line's not that bad.
Well, they traded, one of the biggest hauls in recent memory for
I guess it's like
you, tackles. I hope so.
I would hope so. Yeah. I think that's right. I want to see Tyrod Taylor get his shot, you know, I mean, like such an unfortunate situation for him last year. Yeah. And so, I've been a Tyrod Taylor defender over the years, but I wouldn't feel that optimistic. I mean, I think the best thing they have going for them is bottoming out.
And I mean,
like,
you're right.
They didn't have a lot of room to move. I think there's like, it's, so I'm not sure I can even credit them with this. It's like, it's better to be bad and know you're bad than to be bad and not know you're bad. But there's not a lot. What's your optimistic take for Houston?
Oh boy. I was hoping you were going to have one. they have all their draft picks, right? From this point forward.
Right.
They're not the haul from the Tunsil trade is done. They have their picks. I think in the long run, they will end up getting some sort of trade package for Deshaun Watson. They right. can trade him now, obviously. They're at least saying publicly they don't want to. Of course, Deshaun Watson has pending litigation for his sexual assault cases. I do think in the long run, they will end up trading Deshaun Watson and get something in return for him. So they'll at least have that draft capital. They're not like compromised there the way they were a couple of years ago. They do have Laremy Tunsil. That is a start. But this is a team that is really lacking in young talent. Even the moves they made this offseason, like I appreciate that Nick Caserio had a plan, but like it was just they were playing Madden and they went to the free agent pool and they signed like the 30 guys who were going to be available for the minimum to fill out the back end of their roster because they just did not have anything on the back end of their roster. Even if that works for 2020, even if they do end up being more competitive than people give them credit for, like there's all those guys are leaving. You know, like there's right. just, there's no, so little of this team is going to be here in 3 years. And there's just not going to be a lot to replace those guys. So maybe 4 or 5 years, I'll feel better, but like it would take something really remarkable to me for them to get out of the bottom spot over the next year or two.
That defense is going to be so bad in 2021. I mean, they were bad last year and their best player on that defense is gone. So it's going to be rough.
Yeah. But at least they know they're going to be bad.
Yeah.
At least they have that. 31, the Detroit Lions. I mean, it just feels like night and day compared to the Texans, where at least the Lions yeah. already have that draft capital. I'm not sure about Dan Campbell. I'm not sure about their roster, but at least they have a plan and at least they have sort of the extra picks to start executing that plan.
So here's one where I was a little surprised. I don't know if our method perfectly captures like trajectory. Mm-hmm. The Lions trajectory, like you said, is like they have you can imagine how this goes well, right? Like they have the capital. So like in the draft capital going forward in future seasons, mm-hmm. they kind of behaved in a way like I liked the way they ran their offseason in the sense of like, yeah, they knew they're bad. They took some shots on some guys like Tyrell Williams and Breshad Perriman. And hopefully, you know, if one of those guys happens to hit, then cool. Mm-hmm. Romeo Okwara is like a young player. So I think it's fine to have kept him around. I think it sort of made sense to let Galladay walk because your timeline is not in the short term.
Right.
But because they have that draft capital, like they're going to be in a good place next year to potentially like take a quarterback or just improve that team substantially. I think there's something to be said for being that then as opposed to a team that is like about to invest another season in a quarterback that we don't think is good and is like still currently trying to win is going to have to be the Lions maybe next year. Mm-hmm. And so at least you're here. I think there is something to be said for that.
Yes. I mean, maybe they'd look worse if it weren't for the Texans, but they do look a lot better than the Texans.
They do. I remember tweeting before the 2020 season, like who is the most like hopeless, team, like if you're a fan. And I remember you said the Broncos, this is pre-2020. And I was debating between the Jags and the Jets. And like in all three of those cases, it was like they were about to invest in a season in a quarterback that none of us thought was going to be very good. Mm-hmm. And like now all those teams have done that. And well, I guess like two of those teams ended up getting a quarterback and they're like now have a path forward. Mm-hmm. So that's better. I guess it's just like it's just hard, I think, if you're a fan watching your team like go put another year into a QB and not feeling like you've got a great shot.
Yeah, that's fair. In terms of things that happen quickly, the team at 30 really interested me. Philadelphia Eagles. And I mean, would 3 years ago, so if we had done this 3 years ago, would have been future power rankings ending as we were approaching the 2021 season, that either would have been the year they won a Super Bowl or coming off of the year after the Super Bowl where they go 9-7, they make it into the divisional round of the playoffs and lose to the Saints. But you have Carson Wentz, you have Doug Peterson, you're feeling great about this organization. And then the next 3 years happen. I mean, how much did a team like the Eagles inform you in terms of just how quickly things can change over a 3 year span?
Yeah. I mean, I think we were all looking at the Eagles when they won the Super Bowl and saying, wow, what a good roster that, you know, that they had. And like, man, it fell off really quick. And yeah, I was a little like, I think it's like, I'm not saying like, I think they, it's just a little shock. It was a little surprising to me that they shook out in this spot. I'm not sure there's like a ton of, I don't know that I would like once it was compiled, I guess I'd say like, it's like a little surprising that they ended up 30th, but then it's like, I don't know where they would really move to.
Right.
Because like, if you compare the Eagles to like the Bears, I would be more bullish on Justin Fields' future than Jalen Hurts's. Because, you know, Jalen Hurts was, I think, you know, he wasn't that great in limited time last year and is really limited time. And I don't even want to like, I'm not saying you can definitely rebound from a poor rookie season and it absolutely happens. So like, I'm not judging that. I'm just saying like, you adjust your priors a little bit when that happens. And also Fields was a better prospect than Hurts coming out. So like, I would just naturally assume that Chicago's in a little bit of a better spot than Philadelphia. Mm-hmm. If I'm comparing those two teams, but you're right. I mean, it's pretty ugly and you know, they're starting over the head coach. So you've got just like a big unknown there. And you know, they ranked low in our overall draft thing. That surprised me, I guess, a little bit because they did get Smith. Mm-hmm. But it's a little bit of a spot. But, you know, I guess it's like it could also turn around quite quickly, right? Like just as quickly if let's say Jalen Hurts pans out. Well, I mean, it wouldn't take that long to get the Eagles back in position. I think that there's significant question about where the Giants and Washington are going to be in, you know, over the next 3 year span. So it's like it wouldn't be if they're not in the roughest division or anything.
No, certainly not. And I mean, even if Jalen Hurts does not work out, this is a team that has 3 first round picks next year. If Carson Wentz does live up to expectations in Indianapolis.
Yes, I think that's absolutely right. Like one thing that the Eagles, actually multiple teams did this, but like the Eagles, you know, the Eagles, the Lions, the Giants, those are all teams that potentially are going to need to take a quarterback in next year's draft and arm themselves with extra draft capital. Like that makes all the sense in the world. So I give them credit for that.
Okay. I'm going to finish up with this. And this is a brutally unfair question, and I'm still going to ask you it anyway. Taking teams who are not in the top 5. Let's say not in the top 10 in this list. Which team out of the teams who are not in the top 10 do you think has the best chance of being in the top 5 in the future power rankings this time next year?
Good question.
Unfair question.
No, it's a good question. There's two teams that come to mind immediately, and I'm going to debate between them in my head here.
I do not have a good answer. I'm going through it, and I feel like any team I pick, I'm immediately going to jinx. So I don't want to do that to that team.
Okay, so the two teams, I'll just say both, right?
Yeah.
The two teams for me that could make that leap into the top 5 would be the Chargers and the Cowboys. Mm-hmm. So with the Chargers, I think it's what's really impressive to me is that you had not just Justin Herbert's like rookie season be as good as it was, but like he did it behind that offensive line. Like they ranked 31st in pass block win rate and they made significant upgrades. And I think it's conceivable that that offense looks a lot better when that, you know, when that happens, like Derwin James back on defense. Like I think there's upside there for the Chargers. I sort of hesitate because it's like, I don't want to assume, I don't want to make this assumption about Justin Herbert, like just because he was good as a rookie, that he's going to take this big leap in his second year and become an elite quarterback. Like he was elite for a rookie last season. And he was really good, but to make top five, you have to take another step. With Dallas, it's like, I think that offense has tremendous potential. The defense is definitely scary, but I always lean back on like, you know, offense being more stable year to year than defense, and defensive regression works both ways. And so if Dallas can sort of luck into mediocre defense, I think they have real potential. And I think it's like a lot has to break right, but you can see it breaking right. Like if you get Tyron Smith and Lyle Collins and Zach Martin all there for a full season, if DeMarcus Lawrence like finally has that big sack year, it could happen. I mean, I think we all feel confident in the Dallas passing game, so it could break right there. I think those would be the two teams that jump to me that could make that kind of leap.
Now, I said not in the top 10. The Chargers were 11th.
They were 11. Okay. Yeah. Well, I went down the board for Dallas, but
I'll give you the Cowboys. Can I go further down the board here?
Please.
With my pick as we finish up here, I will go with the Jaguars at 21. And that's already the 21st place ranking is already pricing in some of the expected improvement from Trevor Lawrence, who they have as the ninth best quarterback situation in the league. But like, what if Trevor Lawrence is a top six NFL quarterback from then? What if he's Andrew Luck for the Colts? Suddenly that entire franchise changes. And we don't know what Urban Meyer is. He might be a terrible NFL head coach. He might be a great NFL head coach. I think that he's one of the higher risk, higher reward hirings for an NFL team in a while. So I think to get in that ballpark, you need a great quarterback. Certainly the two teams you mentioned have great quarterbacks, but I'm going to pick a longer shot. And I'm going to say the Jags just because I think that not only is it the quarterback situation, I think there is some talent around that quarterback. The players around, I think Lawrence are better maybe than people are giving them credit for. And that division does not look especially scary to me. I mean, the Tennessee Titans are a very top-heavy, very veteran-heavy team. The Texans are the Texans. The Colts, I mean, I think a smart organization, but, you know, questions about their roster after, you know, inconsistent drafting, I would say. And certainly with Carson Wentz now coming in, we don't know what Carson Wentz is going to be in this new role. So, I mean, I think the AFC South is more wide open than people are giving him credit for. And I think that the quarterback upgrade is massive here. And I think Trevor Lawrence is, you know, by all accounts, not a once in a lifetime prospect, but certainly better than even your typical first overall pick starting quarterback prospect, at least based on the football people I might talk to. I don't know if the analytics bear that out as well.
They didn't necessarily, but I think it's totally reasonable to have high expectations for Trevor Lawrence. I like the pick. I think the justification there was strong. And I agree. I think it's important not to sleep on that division and how many wins the Jags might rack up because of who they're playing. That's big. That could be really big.
Well, we will certainly see. We will have you back on this time next year for future power rankings too. But Seth, until then, until you can gloat about all the things you got right in this year's podcast, where can people check out your work?
You know, best place is just follow me on Twitter, just at Seth Walder. And if I write something, I will tweet it. I promise.
that is the Seth Walder promise. Can people file for some sort of compensation if you do write something and don't tweet it?
Yeah, absolutely. Just, you know, make sure you reach out to, I think it's at Bill Barnwell. And yes. If you just hit him up, he'll make sure you receive a check will be in the mail from him.
Yes, I will Venmo you. If Seth writes something and does not tweet it out, I will tweet it out for Seth. If Seth does not tweet it out, but Seth, of course, I mentioned earlier, you do great work. It's always fun to read you and really happy to have you on the show. And we'll have to do this again sometime in the near future.
Thanks, Bill. Appreciate it.
All right. Thanks so much to my guest today, Seth Walder. Seth does great work on the NFL for us. Definitely check, you know, anytime he writes something, it is something I stop what I'm doing to read what Seth wrote. Recommend you do that as well. We have more audio coming, more NFL preview coming next week. We're getting closer and closer to the season. It's crazy. I think we're about 2 months away now, or less than 2 months away, but camp's coming. A lot of NFL stuff to get to. So hope you guys are enjoying it. Hope we have more to talk about next week here on The Bill Barnwell Show.